Elder Day. It's about faith. It's about support. It's about never giving up, no matter what the odds are. We are Notre Dame.
So it's all come down to this. 6 seconds left on the clock.
Last play of the game. This is it.
You have to throw the ball here. I don't think he can run it.
Oh, my.
Three wideouts in the game. Shotgun snap. Here come blitzers.
Back to throw. Meyer. Look. Rolls to the right.
Throws it. It's caught by Samardzija.
He's at the 30. Afterburner to run.
In the open field. Inside the 20.
Inside the 10. He's going in. Notre Dame has scored.
And Notre Dame is out in front.
Phenomenal pass off this football by the Irish.
Unbelievable, unbelievable finish.
Pandemonium on the field. Notre Dame is number one.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Less than 24 hours until kickoff at Notre Dame Stadium. Game two of the 2019 season for the University of Notre Dame. The Fighting Irish, for the first time ever, will take on the Lobos of the University of New Mexico. Kickoff at 2:30. You can hear the ball game right here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Eric Hansen is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT radio sports director Darren Pritchett. Tyler James from the South Bend Tribune will be co-hosting the second hour of the program. Sean Stiers away from the program today and will not call the Mishawaka game. Brian Miller will fill in tonight. And yes, we have Mishawaka Caveman football against South Bend Adams. Pre-game at 6:45, opening kickoff is set for 7 o'clock. So we're on the air until 6:45 tonight. We're going to talk some Notre Dame football, of course, with the second game of the year coming up tomorrow. We'll talk about short yardage situations against Louisville that did not work out as planned. We'll talk linebackers. Also, we'll spend a little time on the advantage game, a staple on the program the day before the Irish take the field. We'll analyze the ball game in six different categories, and we'll see who gets the check mark and has the advantage in those matchups. I have a feeling where most of those check marks are going to go, but we'll still learn a lot from Mr. Hansen and his analysis of all of those matchups coming up in a little bit. The by five, the five things that will need to happen for the Irish offense to have success against New Mexico. Next hour, when Tyler joins me, we have a potpourri of questions to throw out, some Notre Dame football general conversation. We'll have rapid fire, which will include: what is the biggest needed fix for the Notre Dame football team after game number one? Tyler and I will kick that around. I believe my answer is very similar to my esteemed colleague, media mogul Eric Hansen. So we'll get to that coming up in a little bit. Also, we'll check the Major League Baseball scoreboard with the pennant races hot and heavy. Cubs gave up four in the top of the first. Cubs scored five in the bottom of the first. And so it's going to be one of those days. And Wrigley Field with John Lester on the mound. They're now in the top of the third inning, 5-4 Cubs over the Buccos. So sit back and relax and enjoy some Notre Dame football conversation on the eve of the matchup against the Lobos of New Mexico. Once again, head coach Bob Davey of New Mexico will not make the trip. A very serious medical condition occurred after the victory over Sam Houston State, and he will not make the trip back to South Bend. So he'll be watching the game from home, but his son Clay, who played some football at Penn, is the tight end coach. So we'll have one Davey on the sideline at Notre Dame Stadium tomorrow. All right, so you got your sunglasses all ready to go tomorrow?
I do. I should have to use them, too.
It sure looks like it. Sun should be out. Should be a very nice day for football. And it's always great to get back into Notre Dame Stadium. Oddly enough, the last time I've been in Notre Dame Stadium was for the Notre Dame-Michigan hockey game. The last two times I've been to Notre Dame Stadium were for hockey games. So
you missed the soccer friendly this summer, then.
Yes, the South Bend Cubs were on the road. I missed out on watching all the backups for Liverpool play in that particular game. But I did watch a little bit of it, though, when I was up in Lansing. I watched like 15 minutes on my computer just to see what it was all about, just to see what the stadium would look like with a pitch in the middle of it. Well, the Irish are going to try to put together a really good performance tomorrow, build on their game against Louisville, which was all the way back on September the 2nd, a 35-17 victory. I know we've talked a lot about the good and the not so good from that football game, an area that you would have to think was stressed since that game is short yardage situations. The Irish did not have as much luck as you would have thought in those spots with an experienced offensive line, a Louisville run defense that was not very good the year before. Now, I remember right after the game, Eric, I at least pointed out one third down or fourth down play that was in the third quarter that Louisville had 9 men in the box. And you're asking a lot of your players to run against that. And that was the play that, yes, Louisville had 9 in the box. Tremble missed on a block at the point of attack. And that was one of several times Notre Dame could not pick up short yardage situations. Brian Kelly was asked that question on the Brian Kelly radio show last night. So what did you do this week to fix short yardage? And as you'll hear, play calling was one of the things that he talked about last night here on WSBT Radio.
If you take specifically the Louisville game, there were 3 third and shorts where we shouldn't have run the football. The ball should have went out on the perimeter. That's 3 of 7 third down situations where the ball went out, should have went out on the perimeter. There were 2 third down situations where, a little bit better blocking, a little bit better running, and we pick up, a first down. And then I think there were 2 that we needed to execute in the passing game a little bit better, that we were open and we didn't execute quite as well. So I think when you look at third down situations, look, the defense is going to have more guys at the line of scrimmage than you can block. And so it becomes a will and a desire that you have to have when you call a run play on third and short. They're going to have more guys than you can block. So you have to either figure out schematically how you're going to handle that, or you got to get through it with an extra guy there, and you got to run through a tackler, and you got to make sure that you get through that unblocked hat, or you throw the football. And then, of course, if I throw the ball on third down, I'm going to hear it from every reporter, all week about why'd you throw the ball on third and short. I'm just kidding in a sense, but you have to be able to do both. But at the end of the day, all of those require precise execution in run pass options, because the defense is not going to give you fair numbers on third and short. There's going to be more there on the line of scrimmage. And if we go back to what I originally said, we didn't execute at the level that we need to, because we're going to call the same plays again.
Okay. Well, he did also mention early on that he felt like that there were a couple of times you got to get the ball to the outside. And I'm assuming he is questioning some of the play calling. Hey, I get what he's saying. You're going to be outnumbered, but sometimes you can't run your head into a brick wall and expect to walk away.
Right. And I'm not so sure that he's second-guessing Chip Long as much as he's saying that Ian probably should have recognized something at the line of scrimmage and changed the play, which he normally is pretty good at.
Well, there were definitely situations where whomever was in charge of the final decision, it did not work out as planned. You just can't keep running into a brick wall. You got to get the ball to the outside when they bunch the middle. So we'll see if there are alterations to that coming up on Saturday, tomorrow, against New Mexico. Now, Jameer Smith, the Irish running back, suffered a toe injury during practice last week. Was it during the scrimmage specifically last Saturday? Do you know?
It was, yes, during the scrimmage specifically last Saturday. Yes.
All right, so Brian was asked about scrimmaging last Saturday, trying to keep the guys fresh, but also keep them sharp as they enjoyed a bye week last week. And here's Coach Kelly from his radio show on WSBT Radio discussing what he was looking to accomplish last Saturday in the scrimmage. And also, sometimes you got to hit. You can't worry about injuries.
I think you look at it, you know, one of two ways. You know, you try to think about, you know, protecting your football team. But, you know, my experience has told me that very rarely do we get injuries in contact scrimmages. We get them in, you know, the most incredibly inane kind of, you know, non-contact situations. You know, I don't want to back off from keeping our team sharp and tackling and playing football. You know, we've actually looked at our non-contact drills and have adjusted those a little bit more so than our contact drills. So there was no question in my mind we were going to take guys down to the ground. We're just doing it smart. We don't cut tackle. We don't do some things that you would do in a game to protect our players, but I have actually tweaked the non-contact drills. That sounds kind of crazy, but you know, one-on-ones, things like that. We've had two guys go down with broken collarbones in one-on-one drills, just falling down. So you're required to stay up. You can't fall down. No falling down in one-on-one drills.
So do you think most of this is about staying sharp, or do you think this could be partially about this football team just needed to execute a whole lot better from what they saw in the Louisville game?
Well, I think that was the best way to, I think it's answer B, and that's the best way for you to illustrate that. You know, there's times where you can get by with not going at full speed, and there's times you have to just have to simulate. You can't simulate what you're trying to teach unless you go full speed. I know, Darren, when we go back to that 2007 season with Charlie Weiss, when they went 3-9, a lot of the problems that were created that season, there were a couple. One was that Charlie gave the starters so many reps, more than, you know, 95% of the reps to 5%, which is too high of a percentage. His roster turned over, and then there were problems. And then it was compounded by the fact they didn't have enough full-speed practices, so that players weren't simulating what angles looked like and what hitting looked like and so forth. So they got into games and the sense of timing was all off. So I think this is, you know, especially when you have linebackers trying to get run fits right and you're trying to make corrections in that. Notre Dame is the number 126 team out of 130 in run defense. You want to make sure that you are making those corrections.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat here on WSBT Radio, brought to you by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org and by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. So last year, before the Ball State game, I think it's fair to say there was a mentality that there was a plan in place. Once the Irish got control of the football game, a lot of guys were going to see the playing field. Anytime any major program also takes on a weaker opponent, what are the conversations that normally takes place, not only amongst media, but also the fans? Hey, the fans sit around and talk football. Are the Irish going to keep it more generic this week, taking on just New Mexico before going down to Athens and taking on number 3 Georgia? Brian Kelly addressed that topic on last night's Brian Kelly radio show on WSBT Radio.
You know, you're going to run your base offense and defense. You know, I think that, you know, do you run everything that you have in your offensive arsenal? No, because sometimes they're not congruent to your opponent, you know. So we're not going to do everything that we would do against Georgia, against New Mexico, but we're going to do the things necessary to beat New Mexico. And so if that means we've got to run plays that hadn't run before to beat New Mexico, we're going to do that. So I've never really felt like we got to hold this part of the playbook off because we're going to save that for Georgia. We're going to be who we are. And then the next week, there's plenty of other plays that they're not going to have seen that are on film that we can take out of the library.
This football team needs to get back to winning the line of scrimmage battles. I don't care what play calls you have, Eric. It's coming down to being more physical, controlling the line of scrimmage. That was not done as much as I think both of us thought going into the game against Louisville. I don't mean to speak for you, but I think we're on the same wavelength there, right?
You are correct.
They got to run the ball better. They got to stop the run a whole lot better. And you got to start with this game against New Mexico. If you cannot win in those two areas, it is going to be very, very difficult to get to where you want to go, plain and simple. I mean, that's old school football.
Right, and that's what Brian Kelly built a playoff squad around, was having a really good defensive line for, which was not something that's happened a lot during the post-Holtz era, and then having a really good offensive line. They weren't really good last year, but they were good enough to be a finalist for the Joe Moore Award. So that has to be two of the best position groups on your team this year. And then you have some really good skill around that, and that's how you make it to the playoff. But those two position groups didn't show up in abundance, and certainly the gong show at linebacker didn't help. But yeah, they did get better as the game went on. But that 126 out of 130 number, I don't care how skewed the statistics are at the beginning of the year, that should never show up in Notre Dame's column, a ranking that low in run defense.
Okay, you mentioned the linebacking core, and that's something, of course, Brian Kelly was asked about following the ball game against Louisville, and again earlier this week during his initial press conference. With all the bodies being thrown at the mic and the buck, it looks like Drew White has the starting spot right now at the mic. The buck is a little more uncertain. Eric asked Coach Kelly about the linebacking core earlier this week.
I think situationally, I think it played out pretty good. I thought Jack Lamb did a really good job in his time in third down situations. I thought the rotation with Simon and Asmar looked really good. I think Drew Wright had a nice first game starting for us. I think you probably see, Bo Bowers really had a nice couple of weeks here where he has probably earned some playing time. But I think it's coming together for us. You know, it's starting to kind of settle into a more consistent pattern of what we want from those guys. We're feeling like we're going to get the job done the way it needs to be done at the highest level.
Okay, Jack Lamb was in the ball game in all passing situations. So that's who he is right now in situational football. Drew White is that guy. You went in there on first and second down. Eric, from there, just after the first game, I don't think we have a really good feel what's going to happen. It just felt like they were going like Clark Lee talked about, line shifts, like we see in hockey. So as Irish fans get set to watch or listen to this football game tomorrow, what do you think they're going to see at the linebacker position? Is Drew White at the mic starting out and Jack Lamb coming in pass situations the two most obvious things that we'll see, and everything else, I think it's just going to depend on what the coaches are feeling in that moment?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that they're looking to move Asmar Bilal out of there. I think they're open to people overtaking him if he doesn't play up to the standard that they've kind of set for him. But I don't think they want to do that until maybe a little bit later in the season. I think that there's...
Post-Georgia.
Yeah, post-Georgia, that there's a security blanket with having a fifth-year senior, and all things being equal, they're going to kind of bet that he's going to be more assignment correct than the other people that are challenging him. And so I think that's, maybe we'll see a little bit more rotation at that position, but I still think he's going to start. It'll be Drew White and Asmar Bilal, and certainly Jack Lamb on those third down situations.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. We have the Advantage game coming up in just a couple of moments here on WSBT Radio. Along the same lines, the Rover belongs to Owusu Koromoa against Louisville. He was second on the team in tackles with 9 as he collected 6 solos and 3 assists. I know that's a guy that was asked about in the chat that Eric hosts at IndyInsider.com yesterday, and Brian Kelly has his thoughts on Owusu Coromoa at the Rover.
Well, I think it's unmistakable that when you watch him, he's an extremely active player, physical, has all the tools, first-time starter. So you can imagine there's going to be a lot of things that we need to dial in and fine-tune. Love his energy, love his enthusiasm, and I love that he plays for us. Now we've got to fine-tune some things. He also plays on the edge of our defense, which requires, you know, a heavy dose of responsibility to that. So, you know, he's going to be a guy that continues to flash, continues to impact what we're doing defensively, but he's still growing and he's still learning. And there's going to be some days where, you know, there's a learning curve there for him. But boy, he's an exciting player to watch, and his ceiling is really, really high.
Well, the athleticism really showed up in the Louisville game. A guy that can do a lot of different things from that Rover position. That's what you need with that hybrid linebacker safety spot. So the ceiling for this guy, pretty unlimited at this point?
I think so. You know, he's finally got a chance to show what he can do. You know, when he showed up as a true freshman, they were very intrigued by his athleticism, and he was drinking from a fire hose.
Sure.
And then his sophomore year, they thought, maybe this is the year, and then he gets hurt and gets set back. And then finally, this spring, kind of the last week, week and a half of spring practice, you went, oh, this is what they saw when they made him the first Rover recruit of the Brian Kelly era. And it's showing up big time. And I still think there are times where he makes mistakes, and there's also the kind of athleticism that makes you be able to outrun those mistakes sometimes. Yeah. So I'm excited about him. I really like where all this is headed with him.
The advantage game coming up in a couple of moments. Notre Dame and New Mexico kick off tomorrow at 2:30. All the action right here on WSBT Radio. Pregame coverage starts at 10 a.m. Eric Sean and I will host Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat from 11 until 1:30 on WSBT Radio. Just before we go to break, in the wee hours of this morning at Four Winds Field, we had a very interesting finish to the South Bend Cubs Midwest League Championship Series Game 2. The game was 2-2 in the bottom of the 10th inning. The Cubs had the winning run on third base with two outs.
Spiked in the dirt, the ball gets away. Here comes Roederer. The catcher throws to the pitcher. The ball is dropped. Roederer scores, and the South Bend Cubs win Game 2 of the Midwest League Championship Series on a wild pitch thrown by Culbertson. Roederer scores, and a commanding 2-0 series lead for the South Bend Cubs heading to Iowa for Game 3 on Saturday.
So, South Bend got it done, and they're now one win away from their first Midwest League championship since they were a Diamondbacks affiliate in 2005. So, Game 3 is Saturday, and if Clinton wins Game 3, I guess I will hop in the car for Game 4 in Clinton, Iowa, Sunday evening. But Notre Dame football front and center all day long tomorrow here on WSBT Radio. Advantage game. More on Notre Dame, New Mexico next as Sports Beat rolls on. He's Eric, I'm Darren, and this is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We now get to the advantage game at 5:36 at 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We talk about six different matchups in the Notre Dame, New Mexico game at Notre Dame Stadium tomorrow at 2:30 right here on WSBT Radio, and we will start with what used to be the strength of the Lobos, and now they have changed the way they do things offensively. So what about the New Mexico run game against an Irish run defense that I would assume might be a tad bit on the hungry side in focus tomorrow?
And
that's
where
you jump in.
Okay, I thought you were going to play a sound bite.
No. I'm sorry.
Well, I do think we'll see I'm sorry.
I thought you were pouting again last night.
Yeah, that was wonderful.
I forgot your ice cream. I'm sorry. I'll make it up to you.
Right. No, I
Next time I'll write the questions down for you so you'll have them, okay? Then I won't throw you off. Fair enough. All right, let's go.
Okay. So I think there'll be a lot of good things to focus on. The one thing they're not going to see from New Mexico, though, is a balanced offense. So right. We're not going to see maybe the improvement in the tangible improvement. Certainly mm-hmm. You can see fundamentally if they're playing better. But Louisville was a much more challenging offense in terms of being able to balance it. New Mexico's going to chuck the ball. They're going to try to run the ball. They're not very good at it. So what you're counting on is not having penalties, people being in the right places, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And you're looking for a staggering number. You know, you're 126 in the run defense. You want a number that skews it the other way artificially so that you go into Georgia against the number 10 run offense in the country ready to play.
Kind of like Tulsa against Michigan State, minus 70 rushing yards, whatever that number was at Spartan Stadium. Would that be okay?
Yes, okay. That's what you're looking for.
We'll try to get that
at least zero. Get it low.
A bold check mark to the Irish when New Mexico runs the football. So they're going to have to change quarterbacks due to injury. We could see a couple of different guys. Who knows? That's what C. Virgin from the Albuquerque Journal told us yesterday on the program. So what about when New Mexico throws the football? They threw for over 400 yards, but it was against Sam Houston State.
Yeah. They were 103rd in pass efficiency after the two games, but 15th in pass offense. So they throw it a lot. They don't throw it well. Notre Dame, again, a skewed number, but I think this was impressive. Fourth in the country in pass efficiency defense. They finished in the top 10 last year. I think there's a lot of good elements there, and I think Notre Dame wins that battle pretty handily, even though I think New Mexico is going to get some yards. You're going to see some interceptions from Notre Dame. You're going to see a low completion percentage. Hughes, their starter, isn't going to play. You're going to see a cobbled together of some dual threat quarterbacks playing in his stead, probably Sherrion Jones being the starter, my guess. And so I really think Notre Dame wins this pretty handily.
We now move the advantage game to when the Irish have the football, and we'll start with the Notre Dame rushing attack. No Jafar Armstrong. The Irish starting running back is out for probably a month or so, needing surgery to repair an abdominal injury. So Tony Jones Jr. and the crew against the New Mexico run defense. Who do you like there?
Well, I mean, I guess the good news is you know what it looks like and how it plays without Jafar Armstrong because he was only available about a quarter the first series and I think maybe a play or two in the second series and then he was out. Notre Dame's the number 32 run offense in the country. New Mexico's number 46 run defense. Sam Houston State didn't run very much either in that game. I think even without Jafar Armstrong, Notre Dame is going to have a lot of rushing yards. This is not a game where missing his speed is going to show up. I think Tony Jones will have a big day. Mm. I'm really interested to see what Kyron Williams and Avery Davis do. I'm not sure how much Avery Davis is going to get to carry in this game, but I think it would be good to get wet his whistle against New Mexico.
Very good. Advantage game, Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you. Next up, when Notre Dame throws the football, Ian Book in the opener, 14 of 23, also ran for 84 yards. But I think we all believe there are at least one more level to what the passing game should be able to accomplish game in and game out. So what happens tomorrow?
Well, you know, again, Notre Dame wasn't overly impressive in that category against Louisville, 57th in pass efficiency, 95th in pass offense. But New Mexico is 75th in pass efficiency defense. When you open with an FCS school, that's a bad number. And I think Notre Dame is going to gash New Mexico's defense in the pass. Notre Dame's going to want to be balanced. So I don't think you're going to see 400 yards. But again, New Mexico gave up a lot. 558 total yards. Sam Houston State ran 95 offensive plays against them. So I do expect Notre Dame to have some good numbers. It won't all be Ian Book. I think Phil Jakovic gets in this game.
Came up in your chat. People that cheer for the Irish want to see the deep ball, but You have to stay in the pocket, let the play develop in order to throw the ball deep. And we didn't see that ball go deep against Louisville. And that's just one of the reasons why. I have a feeling we might see a couple of chucked in this game against New Mexico. All right, so the check mark goes to Notre Dame when they throw the football. And now we move to special teams.
Well, I thought Notre Dame's special teams were okay. It didn't really show up. You know, coverage was okay. Returns, they didn't have much of a punt return. I think they returned one kickoff. You know, they were kind of opting for the fair catch option.
The John Goodman option?
The John Goodman option. John Goodman. Back for the fair catch. New Mexico, however, was better than average in just about everything. Now, again, they're going against Sam Houston State, but they were really good on coverage. They were decent in their returns. And their punter, Tyson Dyer, even though they scored 39 points, he punted 9 times, Darren.
Nine times.
I haven't been in studio for a while. I couldn't find the button.
For a 46.8 average. But here's the thing. The net punting average was 45.8, and that's outstanding. Yes. So that's a real weapon in field position. So New Mexico gets my check mark there.
All right. And now we move along to intangibles. And I guess this goes into the category of an intangible as you go into this football game. You ready?
Yes.
Just find a way to beat Navy. Just find a way to beat Navy.
Does that help you at all?
I like it.
Okay.
I'm ready for that. So just find a way to beat Navy. You know, Bob Davie isn't coming back. I think the team, New Mexico, will be a little bit emotional. I would assume that they want to play well for him and want to kind of dedicate this game to doing well for him since he can't make the trip. Having said that, you know, Notre Dame, I think, is in the perfect position for this game because normally you'd say they're going to look ahead to Georgia, but with the mistakes that they made in the Louisville game, this should really bring their focus to the number 124 team in the nation, according to The Athletic, out of 130. So I think Notre Dame is going to show up and show up big time in that game tomorrow. Maybe a little bit of weirdness in the first quarter, and then I think it gets rolling.
I think you're exactly right. That Louisville game is all the players need to think about in order to get ready for this football game, because that was not what they were looking for. And as Brian Kelly always says, they did not meet the standard we have set. They did not, and that should get them ready to go for New Mexico. And then Georgia week starts, hopefully, after a lopsided victory over the Lobos. So that is the advantage game for this week. All the check marks go to the Fighting Irish, who will look to move to 2-0, and that would be 12 consecutive home wins for the University of Notre Dame. We'll come back with a My 5 question of the day next. It is 15 minutes in front of 6 o'clock, and this is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
One question, 5 answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Along with Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune, I'm WSBT radio sports director Darren Pritchett. Today's question, the 5 things that need to happen for the Notre Dame offense to have success against New Mexico and maybe put a smile on the coaching staff's face after this game.
So that they'll be in the mood for ice cream.
There you go.
Okay.
And you'll buy.
I'll buy Dippin' Dots for him.
Number five.
And I key this more to Notre Dame improving because I don't think they have to do all these things to beat New Mexico.
And that's why I said put a smile on the coaching staff's faces.
There you go. A clean game offensively and without the holding penalties, without the false starts. New Mexico is one of the most penalized teams in the country after 2 weeks of college football. And you don't want to match their sloppiness. This needs to be a game where your offense looks crisp and dominant.
Okay, number four.
Well, speaking of dominant, the offensive line needs to look like Quentin Nelson when they're blocking.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, but they should. You know, New Mexico lost their star nose guard. They're not a very big team to begin with. This has to be a game where you clearly look like on film that you are a dominating offensive line and in live action as well on the Jumbotron.
NFL Network has a morning show. It's called Good Morning Football.
Mm-hmm.
And earlier this week, they probably had a 3 or 4 minute segment only about Quentin Nelson and a couple of the blocks he had in the San Diego game. He knocked one of their pass rushers on his tailbone.
I saw the highlight of that.
Oh, my goodness.
He still makes highlights on Twitter. It's an offensive guard, and it's hilarious to watch his highlights.
That's what that crew was saying. We don't talk about offensive guards on this program, but they love it. And then they brought up probably 7 or 8 clips of Nelson playing at a charity basketball game, and he is so athletic. He had some behind-the-back passes, a runner with the left hand off the glass. He had the kiss. It was so impressive. He knows what he's doing on the basketball court. We're going through the 5 things that need to happen for Notre Dame's offense to have success against New Mexico. And, yeah, they should do a lot of things well, but we're looking to make the coaching staff happy. So, 3.
Spread the ball around. You know, he only had 14 completions. 5 were to Chase Claypool. Got to get Chris Fink involved. Yeah. Got to get the ball to Lawrence Keys. Be nice to see Braden Lindsey or Joe Wilkins have a catch. If Cole Kmet plays, which is a possibility, you need to get him the ball. And Tommy Tremble, who Carter did an excellent story about in our tab, need to get him the ball as well. So lots of different receivers.
We are up to 2.
You need to show off your depth in your running game. You're looking for the best options during this absence of Jafar Armstrong, and I think you need to give all of them a whirl if they're healthy. It sounded like, from what I was able to ask Brian Kelly during a commercial last night, that Jameer Smith is trending in the right direction. I don't know if that means he's playing, but certainly you need to look at Kyron Williams, Tony Jones Jr., Avery Davis, and Sebo Flemister. It came to that, asking questions during commercials. How do you like that?
Grumpy Eric from last night is back for just a second here. The 5 things that need to happen for the Notre Dame offense to have success against New Mexico and make the coaching staff happy. 5, simply a clean game. 4, the offensive line look like Quentin Nelson. He's got a good mustache working, too. Have you seen that?
No.
He had a little Fu Man going for a while.
Okay.
Not bad. Also, spread the football around. It would be nice to get Chris Fink more involved. 1 catch last week. Show off the depth in the run game. Kyron Williams, please. And 1 on your list.
They need to see the Ian Book that we saw in the spring and in August. That would not only make the coaching staff happy, that would make my next chap a lot more diverse. There were a lot of Ian Book questions, as you noted, not all of which I answered. I mean, I was kind of ran out of different angles of panic about Ian Book, but hopefully he'll be able to get some people off the ledge this Saturday.
I think he will. He'll be just fine, and then we'll have the Georgia game. And then we'll see what happens there.
Yep.
Whole different storyline. That's the My 5 question of the day. We'll come back with more Sports Beat next. 5:53 on your home of the Fighting Irish. It's Notre Dame and New Mexico. 2:30 tomorrow on WSBT Radio. Our pregame coverage starts at 10 a.m.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, we got lots of high school football, including Marion at Riley, Adams at Mishawaka, Clay going for its 2nd win in a row after breaking a 33-game losing streak at Washington. We have our Indy Insider Wrap. Tyler has a feature on Tony Jones Jr., Annoy column, keys to the game, and much, much more.
That's all coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section. A lot of those big market sports stations always have crossover conversation. I mean, we could kind of do that with Tyler right now.
Okay.
He just walked in studio. Do you mind? We'll just put him right to work, so maybe you can tease the story you have in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Yeah, I actually just tweeted it. I wrote on Tony Jones Jr., talked to his dad a bit. Tony Jones Senior, as you imagine.
Thank you, Eric. You're on top of it.
That crossover talk helped.
If you need a detective service, Eric Hansen is ready for you.
And, he's coached him from his time as a youth and has some interesting takes on Tony Jones, his son. And I thought it was kind of cool. One small anecdote, he wanted him to get in better shape to be the lead running back now. And so he asked him to do 1,000-yard sprints after practice. And so Tony started doing that. And the rest of the running backs and Lance Taylor started doing it with him as well.
Uh-huh. So you got that look forward to in the South Bend Tribune tomorrow. And it's already been tweeted out.
Well, I'll tell you one trick question. Lewis, who's Lewis Nix the second? We know Lewis Nix the third was a player at who was Lewis Nix the second?
I know this answer.
His brother. Lewis Nix Sr., then Lewis Nix the second was Lewis's older brother, and Lewis was Lewis Nix the third. So how do you like that? So it's not always as obvious as you think.
He's speechless.
Like you last night in the last segment of the program, I'm speechless.
I'll buy you some dipping
dots. Have you ever had to go buy Eric ice cream to make him happy?
No, I did buy him pizza last night, though.
Did you really?
I did, yes.
You did.
How nice. Look at that.
It was.
What
it
has
was.
Carter ever bought for you?
He's brought me coffee that I've reimbursed him for. He hasn't bought me anything,
has
though,
he brought yet. You many headaches?
I'm not answering that question. He just needs to be on time when we're on the road. All I can say.
Top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.
Notre Dame is about faith. It's about support. It's about never giving up, no matter what the odds are. We are Notre Dame.
So it's all come down to this. 6 seconds left on the clock.
Last play of the game. This is it.
You have to throw the ball here. I don't think he can run it.
Oh, my.
Three wideouts in the game. Shotgun snap. Here come blitzers.
Back to throw. Meyer.
Throws it. It's caught by Samarja.
He's at the 30. Afterburner's a run.
In the open field. Inside the 20.
Inside the 10. He's going in. Notre Dame has scored.
And Notre Dame is out in front. 17-16.
Absolutely phenomenal pass off this football by the Irish.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable finish.
Pandemonium on the field. Notre Dame is number one.
It is 7 minutes after 6 o'clock. Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sean Stiers is off on assignment tonight. The South Bend Tribune's Tyler James is going to fill in. I'm Darren Pritchett. Thanks for joining us on this Friday evening. Notre Dame and New Mexico. They'll kick things off at 2:30 tomorrow at Notre Dame Stadium. Again, our coverage starts at 10 a.m. with Legacy Heating and Air Game Day live from Ivy Court Inn and Suites. Then at 11, it's the Budweiser Game Day Sports Beat pregame show live from Notre Dame Stadium. Kickoff at 2:30. After the game, the official Notre Dame football postgame show from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. And a reminder, coming up at 6:45, we will go to Steele Stadium. For Mishawaka Cavemen football, it is Mishawaka taking on John Adams High School. Opening kickoff at Mishawaka High School is set for 7 o'clock. Brian Miller will fill in for Sean tonight with the play-by-play call of Cavemen football on WSBT Radio. How are the Slicers this year?
Slicers are not good, unfortunately. 0-3 so far, and we'll see if they can get things righted here. I believe they play Lake Central this week, if memory serves. Or no, actually, Chesterton first. Lake Central's next week.
Okay.
It helps that the schedule is still the same from when I was in high school, except for the first game's New Prairie, but the second game's been different throughout the years. But the regular season schedule in the Doonland Athletic Conference hasn't changed in over 10 years.
Well, not a lot of fun when you take on Penn as a non-conference opponent.
Yeah, New Prairie and Penn, those are pretty good teams, non-conference, and then Valpo was their first conference game. So
we may have to dial up some littler schools to kind of help you get off to a better start, that's for sure. All right, well, of course, Tyler was down in Louisville, covered the Notre Dame game for the South Bend Tribune, ndinsider.com. We'll have the same role tomorrow at Notre Dame Stadium as it's New Mexico and Notre Dame. You know, I'm just going to ask first a journalistic question.
Sure.
Do you go into this New Mexico game, a game in which you expect it to be a blowout, with a different mindset as a writer compared to, for example, the season opener against Louisville or the next game at Georgia?
Not necessarily. I try not to do too much differently or think about the game differently. Obviously,
you react.
Your takeaways and what you think about the team are going to be different based on the opponent and stuff like that. But in terms of like the preparation or the way I'm like, thinking about what's going to happen. Obviously, it's different because sometimes what you expect to happen may or may not happen, but I try not to make that impact the way I report things moving forward. I think certainly if they were to lose against New Mexico, that would obviously be something that you would have to definitely adjust on the fly, because that would be something you would have anticipated. But I try to be, at least on game days, pretty reactive to what's going on rather than anticipating something happening.
Just like broadcasters, most do not have a big call in mind. They just go through with it. Whatever comes to mind is what you say. Well, you're big in offensive line play, so I'm just going to start there. The Irish have four starters back from last year's football team. Jared Patterson transitioned from tackle to center and had his ups and downs. Hey, first started center, that's going to happen at this level. So did you walk away feeling good about the offensive line? And I will mix in just the fact that BK last night on his radio show mentioned that some of those short yardage situations, he didn't necessarily mention the offensive line that much. He did mention sometimes you're outnumbered, you got to just get it done. But I think the altering of the play call or the play call coming in could have been a little different, taking some pressure off the offensive line. So with that being said, was that a good start for the offensive line? Should we have a higher standard?
I think it was an okay start. Maybe good. Probably good in terms of maybe pass protection. I thought they were pretty good there. Certainly Ian Book didn't necessarily help them out all the time in running into some problems. But I thought that they handled things pretty well, all told. If talking about the short yardage stuff, I went back and rewatched the third down plays. And two of them I thought Jarrett Patterson made mistakes. There was a third and two that resulted in a Tony Jones negative 2 yard run. Patterson just got blown up in the middle. Tommy Kramer was pulling to the right side, and there was a blitzer there, so you didn't really get a good block on that guy. But I think if Patterson's guy doesn't blow up the middle of the field, that he would have still created enough room there for Tony Jones to get through. The next one was the next drive, third and one. Jameer Smith had a zero yard gain, and Patterson and Aaron Banks, it looked like it was a zone blocking scheme to the right, and because Louisville's playing a 3-4, there's someone head up on Jared Patterson, and he stepped more to his stayed too far or too long to his left, helping Aaron Banks get on that nose guard, and then Patterson didn't get up to the linebacker who blitzed right through there, and that caused the issue there. And then on the third. In the first drive of the third quarter, it was a third and one.
That's the one.
They blocked it pretty well, I thought. Tommy Tremble was on the play side, and he was trying to come down on a linebacker, and the linebacker beat him because they had Banks and Eichenberg pulling that way, so it looked like they were going to be able to clear some space there, and it just kind of shut down really quick. So it just the smallest of mistakes in those short yardage situations can come back and cause issues. So I think certainly room for improvement there. Those three guys there, or those three plays, two guys I singled out there, are first-time starters, or first seeing playing time for the first time at Notre Dame. And so they need to improve. I thought Jarrett Patterson played okay, but he did look like a guy that was making his first start at center, and especially playing against a 3-4 where you got a guy head up on you, that's going to be challenging.
Great point. A year ago at this time, we're wondering, wonder how good Liam Eichenberg can be. He was a first-time starter at left tackle. Isn't it funny? We don't even talk about him anymore.
Right.
Because he is just a guy you're counting on to do big things for that offensive line.
Yeah, and I thought in pass protection he did well. I only had him allowing one pressure on Ian Book. So I think that he has taken a role of being a leader on that group, and I think he has the right attitude, and he's a guy you want to get behind. So I have high expectations for Liam, and I'm interested to see if he plays that way for the rest of the season.
Okay, so at running back, Armstrong is out for a month. You've got Jones. We'll see if Smith goes with a toe injury.
Right.
You've got Williams, Flemister, and now Avery Davis has moved back to the running back position. If health is not an issue, Jones is the starter. Who do you hope gets the second most carries in tomorrow's game?
I'd still like Jameer Smith to be that guy. I think he is probably the best, maybe, all-around running back. I guess strictly running back, I guess I would say. I think Kyron maybe can do more things. Kyron Williams, the freshman, do more things as a running back and maybe bring more excitement to the offense. But I think Jameer is in a better place to be the guy carrying the ball regularly than Kyron is right now. I would like to see Kyron Williams get more involved in the game. I think this is a prime opportunity for him to do that. He only played one snap against New Mexico, ran a swing route, dropped the ball, and then didn't get put back in there on the offensive side. So I imagine they'll have a longer leash with him this week and let him get out there and have some ups and downs and gain some confidence, because I imagine probably not feeling very confident after that happened against Louisville. And Sebo Flemister, I think, is going to get some action too. They need him to be a reliable guy. I think he's maybe in the middle of between Jameer Smith and Kyron Williams in terms of athletic ability, I think. And I think he can bring some things to this offense, but I think he'll also get involved as a kick returner as well, both him and Kyron. So because the way you anticipate this game is going to go, you should be able to have plenty of carries still around. You certainly don't want Ian Book to have to carry a lot after had 14 carries against Louisville. So let's see what you have in those running backs, especially those younger guys like Sebo and Kyron.
Two things. Maybe Flemister is the McIntosh from a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I can see
carries.
That. Yeah.
Second thing is, you're able to make all of the practices in fall camp that were open to the media. I missed three, I think, because of South Bend Cubs travel. So I'm going to test your memory. Do you recall in scrimmage situations, which I know there wasn't a whole lot, of Kyron running the ball successfully between the tackles? Because we know he can catch the ball despite the drop in the Louisville game. An exciting player, you get to the outside. But is he a guy you think that can run between the tackles, considering what you were able to see?
I think he can, and I'm not sure if there's anything specifically that I remember from camp, but I think he did a little bit of that in the blue-gold game, if my memory serves me. He's a pretty physical kid. Just because he's a smaller guy, I wouldn't be a worried about him running between the tackles. I know he played wide receiver early in his career, but he's put on weight and gained weight and put himself in a position to handle that. Obviously, when you're doing that, you got to be very secure with the football, and Notre Dame's got a very long streak of not having lost a football from the running back position. So I think anyone that goes in there, and that includes Avery Davis, he put the ball on the field, I think, twice against Stanford last year. So I think Lance Taylor's probably going to have to make sure that he's prepared to do that if and when he's asked to get on the field back at running back now again, too.
Tyler James, Darren Pritchett with you. Eric, a couple of days ago, felt really good about Avery Davis getting carries in this football game, coming right back to running back. Are you excited to see Avery? Do you think we'll see Avery get some carries in this game?
I'm less certain that will happen.
Me too. I rarely disagree with Mr. Hanson, but he is ambitious on Davis.
Yeah, I mean, he has some athleticism that the group needs, but it's just, how much do you try? I mentioned the fact that he fumbled twice, that they didn't lose the fumbles, but he put the ball in danger. So I'm not sure. It seems like a very quick turnaround. I guess you had the bye week to adjust to that, but I would be a little bit surprised if he's relied on too much coming out of the gates here, but we'll have to see. He did get action pretty early in the season last year. It seemed like that waned as the season went on when Dexter Williams was more available. And I'm curious. I think he's a guy, and I think the way Brian Kelly described him is that he's replacing Jafar, but not necessarily that he's replacing him on the depth chart, but I think he's a guy that they can feel comfortable playing as a wide receiver in addition to playing as a running back. And so maybe he's a guy they throw in there with maybe Tony Jones in the backfield and Avery Davis in the slot or something like that. So maybe he's a guy that they feel like they can do some two running back stuff with. But I would think that Kyron Williams can do that too. So you're going to have to figure out what Notre Dame feels most comfortable with moving forward.
Okay, Tyler, on behalf of most of Irish Nation, I'll ask this question. What's going to happen to the Buck linebacker tomorrow? Bilal? Is it going to be Simon? Are you going to go off the board?
I have no idea. I think Bilal will probably see the majority of the playing time early still. I'd like to see Shane Simon there. I also would like to see Jordan Jemarkeith. I think you just keep running those guys out there until you can figure things out. Any reps that they can get are valuable. I know that maybe puts more stress on whoever's playing next to them because you're playing with different guys throughout the game. But I think that's just the situation they're in. I think Asmar Bilal can be a better player than he has shown at various times throughout his career at Notre Dame. And I think he's a guy that needs to be certain of what he's doing, or else he's going to look a little bit tentative out there and maybe put himself in position to not really make plays. He doesn't seem like he makes a lot of mistakes necessarily, and that probably has a lot to do with why he's out there. But he doesn't seem to flash and make big plays for you and make tackles for loss or break up a lot of passes. So I think trying to find someone that maybe can do that without making those mistakes would be the ideal situation, but I don't know if that exists right now.
I guess we shouldn't be surprised tomorrow if Sean Crawford does not have an impact on this football game. He's a guy that the coaching staff absolutely loves where he is right now, coming off these injuries, and they are putting a lot of responsibility on him and got off to a great start against Louisville.
Yeah, happy to see him back out on the field. No doubt. He's gone through so much during his time at Notre Dame, and I imagine he's just as excited as anyone else, and he makes a difference in that secondary, and if they can rely on him to be healthy, I think that opens things up a little bit more. You can feel a little bit more comfortable with what you have going on out there. Allows Notre Dame to put probably its best defensive backs on the field at all times. So I think I liked what Tariq Bracey's at, and mm-hmm. I think the fact that they can maybe rotate those two so Sean Crawford's not out there every play is probably good in the long run for Sean Crawford. So I think as long as he can stay healthy, Sean Crawford's going to be a very important asset to this defense.
Did you read Eric's chat yesterday?
I did not read his chat. We had so much coverage on IndyInsider.com. I read everything else, but I didn't actually get to the chat.
Well, the one thing that I thought was very interesting, and Eric thought it was a really intriguing thought from an Irish fan who wrote in to that chat at IndyInsider.com, which is every Thursday at noon.
Correct.
His thought was, do you think the coaching staff has given any thought to taking cornerback Dante Vaughn and doing the four-game redshirt with him, saving him for next year when you're probably going to need a couple of cornerbacks that are going to be brand new to this football team from a starting lineup perspective? Because then that would set up Bracey and Vaughn to be together next year. Is that off the wall? Is that interesting to you?
It's interesting. I would need to know more about where they think Dante Vaughn is now. Is he not playing because they want him to be able to play next year? Is he not mm-hmm. playing because they don't think he can play well enough this year? And if he can't play well enough this year, he's not going to play well enough next year, in my opinion. I think you'd rather develop guys and have those guys that you're going to have in the long run play cornerback than bring Dante Vaughn back.
That's asking a lot of a veteran player, too. He'd have to buy in.
Right, yeah, absolutely. And the guy that's gone through some injuries, he hasn't always been able to stay healthy. That would be a little bit of a risk, I think. But I think if you're in that situation, it's probably worth investigating and pursuing, potentially.
Finally, watching that game from the press box, you could see the way the Irish lined up defensively. I don't know if I've ever been more excited about a dime package at Notre Dame than what we saw against Louisville with all those safeties out there, including Hamilton and Gilman on down the line. That's a really interesting bunch. You get Lamb out there as well.
Yeah, I love it. I think Gilman's essentially kind of playing a little bit of a linebacker there. Okay. He's playing inside the box, I think, more or less. And you got Hamilton out in the field. You get Tariq Bracey out there, and Sean Crawford can move inside to the nickelback spot. So I think it gives them a lot of different options and certainly helps with the pass rush. If you get a lot of DBs out there that you feel comfortable with in coverage, you can be more aggressive with that pass rush. And so I think it's a very interesting twist, and I'm curious to see how much action that unit gets. Usually dime, you think of, well, it must be third and very long situation, but I think they might be confident enough in that group because those DBs can tackle well enough that maybe even in some shorter yardage situations, maybe not, obviously not third and short, but like even a third and six, you feel comfortable enough throwing those guys out there.
Hamilton had a couple of pass breakups, and he read a run play and just missed it.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have been a spectacular play, and they actually got some good yardage after he missed, but he anticipated what was coming, just couldn't make the tackle.
He gets up there in a hurry. If he knows what's going on, you're not going to have much time to get past him.
Tyler James, Darren Pritchett with you on this Friday. Mishawaka football coming up in 22 minutes. We've got rapid fire coming up. We've got a handful of Notre Dame football questions to get to. We mix in Notre Dame with the Bears for one question, and also a Cubs-White Sox question, all coming up in rapid fire next. It is 6:24 at WSBT.
Rapid fire starts now on Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT.
Well, this is Sean's segment normally, so I went to work today, came up with the rapid fire questions for today's program. He's Tyler James from the South Bend Tribune, IndyInsider.com. I'm Darren Pritchett. Mishawaka football coming up at 6:45. All right, bunch of questions. I'll let you go first, Tyler. Number one on our list involving Notre Dame football. Who do the Irish more need while they are out? Let me start over with that. Who do you think they need back more due to these guys being out with an injury? Cole Kmet at the tight end position or wide receiver Michael Young?
Yeah, I think it's Cole Kmet, and I think it's partially because I think Ian Book is more comfortable with the throws that he would make to Cole Kmet. Michael Young is, I think, the receiver that we is what we want to see Ian Book eventually do in this offense, but I don't know that he's quite there yet, at least based off of last week or the Labor Day game. So I think it's Cole Kmet. I just think that I think he's probably a better player than Michael Young overall, and I also think that he's a player that they could probably utilize easier in this offense.
Good safety net for a quarterback.
Yep.
Get the ball to him. Also, you think about short yardage. Really good inline blocker.
Right.
So a multi-dimensional tight end would be a nice addition to this squad. Trimble's a really good pass catcher, and he's going to cause some matchup problems. There's no doubt about that. But I think with that inline blocking ability, it would be nice to have Cole Kmet back. All right, next up in rapid fire, what is the biggest needed fix through one game for the Notre Dame football team? If you could fix one thing, it would be?
It's got to be the linebackers, I think. It's just you need fewer mistakes. You need them to make more of an impact, and I'm just not sure how much of an answer they're going to have for that this season.
I think my question ties into yours, and that is run defense. And
sure.
That, of course, goes right to the linebacker position. As they got hurt early on in that game, they made adjustments. It got better, but what happens between the hedges when they go down to Georgia?
Yep, exactly.
How are they going to handle that Georgia run game? That can be a deciding factor in that contest. So I think our answers basically tie together. Next up in rapid fire, who are your picks to click? You're a White Sox fan, so I'm bringing back the Hawk here for this question. So your picks to click for Notre Dame tomorrow will start on offense.
I'm going chalky here. I'll just go with Ian Book. I think he needs to bounce back from a shaky performance against Louisville, and I think he's probably pretty motivated to do that as well.
Okay, I'm going to go along the same lines, but I think Chase Claypool is going to have that career-type day against this New Mexico secondary. Book is going to want to get his main guy involved again. He had 5 catches against Louisville, and I think Chase is ready for that trademark football game, and I think he's ready to have that game tomorrow against New Mexico. So your guy, the pick to click, needs to get the ball to my guy.
All right.
He'll be very, very happy. How about on defense?
Defense, I went with Julian Aquara, another guy that I think is probably the best player on defense, but didn't have the best game against Louisville. I think he played okay. He didn't impact in the passing game as much and generate as much pass rush as I think he'd like. I know apparently he started getting asked some questions about the number he gave me of 18 and a half sacks this summer for our Indy Insider magazine. And so I imagine he wants to maybe quiet some people up for maybe doubting him setting that goal so high and get a couple sacks under his belt against New Mexico.
Well, Aquara was my choice, so I'll go to number 2. This would make everybody happy. Wouldn't it be nice if the Buck linebackers ended up being the right pick-to-click choice?
Absolutely. That would be something.
That would quiet Eric's chat a little bit, to say the least.
No, it wouldn't.
No. At least on that subject. Okay, next up in rapid fire, Tyler James, Darren Pritchett with you at 6:31. If you had to pick one of these two veteran coaches to take over your program, who would you choose? A guy who is at Kansas right now, Les Miles, or Mack Brown, who went back to North Carolina and has beaten South Carolina and Miami with a freshman quarterback?
Yeah, I would have picked Les Miles before the season. I'm less confident in that now. I think I would still probably go with Les just because I think Mack Brown probably took over a better program than Les did. Going to Kansas is almost a death sentence, it seems like, for coaches anymore.
He went there.
So, yeah, he must have just really not had any options. Or maybe he felt like, hey, if you guys are going to doubt me, I'll show you what I can do at Kansas of all places.
Oof.
But I think he might be in over his head there, not really knowing what he was quite getting into. But obviously, you can't really turn Kansas around in a couple games either. It's going to take a while to get that fixed if he's going to be able to do that. So I'll still go with Les Miles, although Mack Brown is certainly making a strong case so far at North Carolina.
I just love Les.
Yeah.
Just the way he handles himself, the post-game comments. He could never be the head coach at Colorado because they don't chew on grass in that state. That would be bad for business, if you know what I mean. But Les did some great things at LSU. It's just shocking he could never get the offense up to what we see in college football today. The lack of having a great quarterback for most of his years is pretty stunning. I still believe in Les. I'm really shocked he had to settle on Kansas. Mack has been amazing. I mean, what a turnaround already at North Carolina. I mean, they looked dismal the last couple of years.
Right.
To take mainly the same talent, it shows you what a coach can do, but I'm going to go with Les just because it's going to be good for hat sales at my university. And also the post-game commentary is going to be good. I've not watched the ESPN Plus Les Miles series. I don't get that streaming service, but I understand it's pretty good. Okay. Who do you have more confidence in going forward?
This was cruel, Darren.
It was? Well, I'm not a Bear fan. They're probably going to kick my team's butt this week, so that'll be my payback. So who do you have more confidence in going forward? The players at Notre Dame's Buck linebacker spot or Bears quarterback Mitchell Trubisky?
Oh, man. Really putting me in a tough spot there. I'm going to go with Trubisky. He's at least had moments in his career,
there
at least,
you go.
As much as we want to bag on him. And I think most of it is deserved, but, it's not a ton of confidence either way right now, but I think, I'm going with Trubisky.
Well, he's got to play better. And this has nothing to do with his performance, but I thought it was odd as much time as Coach Nagy has spent on the field goal kickers and talking about it and showing the video. It just seems overwhelming.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's the reason why they played so poorly in week one. Don't get me wrong. But he just had a weird focus during the offseason. But Green Bay, they signed some pretty good free agents during the offseason. They drafted okay. So that defense might be for real. But I just don't see how Cohen doesn't get the football more.
Yeah, it was a weird game all around from the way that offense played, the play calling and some performances. It was not a fun time.
Didn't run the ball very much?
No.
Interesting. Very interesting game. But I do feel like Trubisky still has shown a little more throughout his career. He's going to go up against a really good pass rush. And I just can't wait to see what Fangio, the old Bears defensive coordinator, does against that offense, because he's went up against them for a few years now, and he knows what they can and can't do. This is going to be an interesting chess match.
Yeah, no easy comeback game for Mitch Trubisky. So I'm fascinated to see how he responds.
Well, who would you rather have in the game, Flacco or Trubisky?
I think I'd still go with Trubisky. At least he can run away from people.
Boy, Joe is a statue. Holy cow. I mean, I grew up with Elway running around, and Joe, not so much. Final rapid-fire question. We're looking ahead to 2020 already. Who will hit more home runs in Major League Baseball? The combination of the Cubs, Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo, or from the South Side, Eloy Jimenez or Luis Robert?
Well, anytime you're going to give me an opportunity to be a White Sox homer, I'm going to take advantage of it. So I'm going with Eloy and Lou Bob, a.k.a. La Pantera, Luis Robert. We talked about a little baseball earlier today on the Leprechaun Lunch with Evan Sharpley, and he asked me where I was at with baseball season right now. I was like, well, I'm pretty checked out because the White Sox didn't really call up anyone and nothing's really going on. But I am looking forward to next year and seeing both Eloy and Luis Robert on the field at the same time. That'll be something.
You gotta be paping me.
Well, the problem is with this question, when will they call up Robert? Are they going to wait like Eloy did and wait for those 18, 19 days?
Yeah.
That could be a few home runs. If things don't work out for the Cubs this year, and it's now 10-7 Cubs. What a wild game. Lester's given up 7 and some bad defense behind him too. But
yikes.
There's going to be a restructuring of that organization and that roster. And I would have to think the Cubs are going to be pretty motivated next year. So I just don't know when they're going to bring up Robert. You know what I think about Jimenez. I'm going to go Bryant, Rizzo, but I'm just worried when they're going to bring up Robert. He might lose four or five home runs, and that could be the difference.
That's a safer bet, and Eloy doesn't have the best record of staying healthy all the time either, so I think that lowers his numbers more than it should.
Could someone explain to me, while he was in South Bend, all of his teammates and coaches called him Eloy, and now he's Eloy?
Yeah, I don't know.
How does this happen?
I'm just following whatever Benetti says. I trust Benetti, so whatever he says goes for my book.
He sat next to me many times on the bus, and we talked, and I always called him Eloy. I don't know why he didn't say, hey, knucklehead, it's Eloy. He never corrected me. Maybe he's too nice. I don't know.
I don't know either.
He got me. All right, that is Rapid Fire. We'll take a quick timeout. It is now just about 6:37, and we are 8 minutes away from Mishawaka Caveman Football on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
The Leprechaun Lunch with former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley and WSBT Radio's Sean Stiers. Friday at noon on 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Really quick segment as we start to wind down on Budweiser's weekday sports beat. They're in the bottom of the fifth inning at Wrigley Field. Pirates scored 4 in the first. Cubs scored 5 in the first. The Cubs would take a 10-4 lead. Now it's 10-7 Cubs in the bottom of the fifth inning. A long way to go at Wrigley. Cubs and Brewers tied for second in the NL Central, 4 games in back of St. Louis. Cubs and Brewers also tied for the second wild card. Who needs Christian Yelich, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they have a bunch of offense. If the pitching can hold up, I don't know how they do it. I really don't know how they do it with their pitching, but they piece it together.
You think Yelich is still MVP if they make the playoffs without him?
I think it'll be Bellinger.
Yeah.
There's going to be a statistical difference now between the two that might be significant enough. I tell you what, the guy that deserves a bunch of votes, I'm not saying he should win it, but if it wasn't for Bellinger, Freddie Freeman of the Braves is having a monumental year down there in Atlanta, leading that young team to the National League East title. So to me, he should get third in the balloting, but maybe he'll sneak up to second with Yelich out. And just a quick thought, Cardinals and Brewers play tonight in St. Louis. And just to put it into perspective, 16 games to go. If St. Louis goes 8-8, the Cubs and or the Brewers would have to go 12-4 to catch them. The Brewers' schedule is much easier than St. Louis and Chicago, mainly because the Cubs and Cardinals play 7 times in the last 10 games, 4 in Chicago and 3 in St. Louis. So can you tell me how this is all going to wrap up?
I'm interested in watching. That's the fun thing about the only plus side of not caring what happens with the White Sox at the end of the season. I can kind of get invested in what's going on elsewhere.
National League's a mess right now. That wild card, it is absolutely a mess. And rarely have the Cubs and Cardinals met coming down the stretch in a playoff race. Just because the differences in the organizations for so long, we might have a heck of a pennant race in the final week. Enjoyed speaking with you. Thanks for joining us, Tyler.
Good to see you. See you on Saturday.
Yeah, we'll see you Saturday at Notre Dame Stadium. Sports Beat tonight brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds and the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. Tyler and I are done for the night. Sit back and relax. It is Mishawaka Caveman Football in just about 3 minutes here on WSBT.